Make It Right, the manufacturing podcast.
Manufacturing is a challenging industry. What was once a fairly localized activity has now become a national or global venture, even for small and medium-sized manufacturers. Welcome to the Make It Right podcast. I'm Janet Eastman, and today my guest is Tom Marini. He's the third-generation president of a family-owned business that was started by his grandfather in 1952. Marini Manufacturing makes precision machine components and assemblies for a variety of industries for customers around the globe. Tom joined the family business as a tool and die apprentice and worked with both his grandfather and his father as he came up through the company. He's seen many changes in the industry, particularly since he became president over a decade ago, and the team at Marini Manufacturing has grown from 5 when he started to between 30 and 40 people. Tom wrote an article for Modern Machine Shop in 2017 about how he developed a second in command on his team so he could focus on growing and achieving his 5 business goals. It's a thoughtful how-to guide, and he joins me today to expand on that topic. Tom, thank you for taking the time to speak with me.
Hi, Janet. My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
I think I really enjoyed that article that you wrote, and so, you know, I had to talk to you about the whole process. So let's just take it right back. We'll set the way back machine. Can you briefly describe how Marini Manufacturing has evolved since you joined the family business as an apprentice? Sort of set the stage for us.
Sure. And it was way back. It was 30 years ago now. So it has, yes, we are going way back in the machine. You know, I think from a business standpoint, I would say we're much more structured now, you know, more systems driven on that side of stuff. There's like tons more documentation, a lot more technology that we're utilizing, policies and procedures too. You know, a lot of that stuff, we had to formalize a few things. And I hope it wasn't in a bureaucratic sense or the negative where we're sacrificing, you know, efficiency or common sense for some of those formal procedures, but we did have to put certain things in and more data driven, different things like that. So it has evolved and become a little more structured over the years, I'd say, from the business standpoint on that side of it. As far as, I guess I'd also, if I could delve into just even the parts we make, you know, we went from making one-off parts or fixtures and tooling where we may never make the part again. We've evolved from a job shop to more of a contract manufacturing company, so that we're making repeat runs, higher volumes, get multi-year deals to run those parts. So it added some stability to the company as well. Get a 12-month forecast and different things like that. So that's kind of how the parts making has evolved. Larger parts as well, larger pieces, things like that. And also, I'd say from our customer standpoint, where we were really just strictly local, probably 90% of our business was done in the hometown. We've kind of, you know, it's probably 90% now outside of our city, more regional, national, and even shipped to probably 3 or 4 countries outside the United States. So it's been quite a bit of change over the years.
So were those changes made after you took over as president, or were those things happening as you came up through the ranks?
You know, probably a combination. So a lot of it probably over 20 years versus probably the 10 years of being president. But a lot of the technology and things were gradually being introduced. And probably in the last 10 years, though, more of a more national presence versus local. So that's probably been in the last 10 to 15 years on that side of things.
Okay. So you're the third generation leader of a family business. So it was probably obvious that you were going to take it over. Was that a difficult transition for you, for the company?
You know, I think anytime there's transition or anytime there's, you know, a business going from one generation to the next, there can be some challenges. And while it was obvious, I think one of the great things was my father, grandfather, it was never an expectation or an obligation. You know, they never saw it as a duty, or I was never told someday this will be yours, or, you know, someday, you know, you'll be running this place. So it kind of was a low pressure, and it was something. If you wanted to become involved, you could. But with that said, I guess I also kind of grew up in and around the company. My mother, she worked in the office part-time doing the bookkeeping or the accounting. So, she brought me along as a little child. So I'd be sitting in the office and encounter employees, you know, who walked in, or if salesmen stopped by or customers visited. So I kind of had, that was my first exposure to the company probably when I was 5 or 6 years old. And so it was just kind of interesting to have that, you know, as I started to grow up. And then it just became something that we did. And so in high school, you know, I'd work there summers or after school if I wasn't playing sports. So I kind of was able to grow up with the business, no expectations, but then it became something that I found I enjoyed doing and made the decision probably my, I want to say senior year of high school, that I'd want to come and work in the business. So I remember having to ask my father and grandfather if they'd have room for me. And, you know, they said yes. And I joined the company as a tool and die apprentice. And it was really, you know, we were small at that time, which was fortunate and I think made things easier. I didn't come in with the expectation to lead, but really to learn. And so the guys, we had a small group of guys, and they really accepted me and wanted me to do well and succeed. And I think everyone's kind of interest kind of aligned because of that. So they, you know, I wanted to do well and succeed. My grandfather and father, obviously, you know, they'd like to see the next generation if that was going to work out to succeed. And I think the employees who were working with me knew that if this didn't work out, you know, would the company be sold? Would they have different bosses? Would different things change? So I think it really worked out to the best that it could in those circumstances. And I'll say probably the only areas where really emotion or challenges arose were when we, you know, when it comes to probably money and control. And so I think during some of the transition when I got, we wanted to get away from manual equipment to CNC or computerized. That was a big discussion, a lot of emotion, because while it was my idea, you know, I was going to be using their money. And I think there was some questions that, you know, I don't think they questioned my, you know, abilities or things like that, but commitment to it and make sure that I was going to stick with this for the long term. Because even though, well, I was probably with the company for 4 years at that time, I think they still, I was only 22 years old. So I think once we got past some of those issues that it was, I had embraced and grabbed onto this, and this was something I was going to do for the long term, it got a little bit easier. But issues such as, you know, buying equipment, you know, the first piece we bought was more expensive than anything they had bought in the previous 40 years or what have you. So it was,
wow.
It was kind of it was a big deal and all those things. So there was emotion involved with all that. When we outgrew our old facility and had to move to a new one, there was probably a lot of discussion and emotion involved with that. And then I think ultimately at the end, when you talk about shareholders and ownership and all those things, there was probably some discussions and some heated, not so heated, a little bit of emotion, a little just different. People are at different spots in their lives. So, but as a whole, when I look back, I'm no worse for wear. You know, it worked out as it should. But really, only those, the day-to-day stuff, they were all so understanding. And I took on and did as much as I wanted to do and grew and did all that. It's just when it touched on usually money or control that there'd be any difficulties. But I respected the fellows I worked with. You know, we grew up, worked together, and we really had some fun times when I look back. So I gave respect and got respect. So the transition was very well. But I think the size of our company and the way I came in, I think that worked out. That was, we were fortunate to, you know, to be able to make the transition we did.
Right. Well, and being the leader of a company, I mean, you're supposed to be the visionary as well. So you have to come up with these big ideas. Big ideas generally require change, and so pushing that change forward, I mean, people don't like change, so you have to maintain that equilibrium, right?
And you're really doing, and that reminds me of a bit. So and my grandfather, he worked in the business quite long, so he was older. I mean, my dad was probably late 50s when I joined the company, and my grandfather was probably late 70s, but still active. I mean, he was the founder, you know, he enjoyed every minute, so he was still heavily involved. But when we'd make this, we'd be talking about issues early on when I was there. My dad and I would look to my grandfather, and he'd ultimately make the decision, you know, what way we were going to go or what kind of decision we were going to make. And then as time passed by, then, you know, we'd all have a discussion about what we think we should do. And then my grandfather and I would look at my dad, and he would make the decision. And then one of my, you know, proudest or happiest moments is when we discuss what we got to do, or we need to buy this equipment, or we need to grow into these markets. We'd have the discussion, and then my grandfather and dad would look to me, and I was able to make the decision. So it was just a good way of going about it, and how the things that the authority and responsibility kind of transitioned through the years. So it was right. Nice. But yeah, someone had to make those decisions.
So you had that really neat leadership support network, as you said, where it finally, you know, got pushed to where you're making that decision. Do you or did you ever find it lonely at the top?
You know, I think probably early on you do. I think when you're young, it's either a combination of maybe, you know, pride, arrogance, ignorance, whatever it is where you don't, maybe you don't want to admit to having troubles and you kind of isolate yourself for different reasons. You don't want to know to people, you know, or people to know that you're struggling or dealing with certain issues. And I think that early on that happened. Now, not so much. You know, if I do, it's by my own doing. I mean, I think I'm either holding on to the issue too close or I may not want to share it. But over the years, I've built kind of a network of support. And so in my own life, probably two ways I would deal with it. I kind of have a personal board of directors or people I've gotten to know over the years. So there's probably four or five individuals that I'll have lunch with on a regular basis, talk to on a regular basis. And if I'm dealing with issues or sorting things out, I can kind of go to them. So depending on the issue, you know, if I have a banker I know, some other business owners, friends, family, different things like that. So I kind of have a personal network that I count on. And then also, though, in a little formal, more formal structure, I have in our town here, in our city, we have a CEO roundtable, a group that was started years back. I was one of the original members. And so it's a group of about 8 to 10 business owners that get together, process, you know, business issues, personal issues, family issues, all, you know, kind of surrounding the business. And so we get together about 10 times a year and we can process issues. You can bring something up. And undoubtedly, everyone has experienced something you're already experiencing or has gone through it and can offer advice or insight. So again, not so much now. That doesn't mean I don't feel stressed or there's certain things that'll still bother me for a little bit, but I try not to hold. I think that the darkest moments are when you feel alone or when you've isolated yourself and think you're the only one who's dealing with certain issues and you make yourself lonely at the top. So I try to, with those mechanisms or with those two groups, I try to avoid that. So early on, I'd say yes. Nowadays, no. And I make sure if I'm letting myself get in those spots, I make sure to get out of them quickly.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's great to have that network. That's fantastic. So tell me, what prompted you to actually start looking for that person who is going to be your second in command?
Well, I think that's a great question, and probably a few things that were going on. I think as the company grew and I did things, we created different areas or departments, and we had different people doing different functions and different roles, but ultimately, I think I still, and however, maybe because we started so small or that was the structure, a lot of decisions or authority still came back to me. So, you know, while there was shipping and receiving, quality, manufacturing, design, all these different groups working, if there was ever competing thoughts or ideas, or there was a difference in opinion, I'd have to make a decision. And that became... One, it was just hard to do it in a timely basis, in a real-time basis, when I was traveling a little bit more for work, more involved in the office. So I wanted to step outside, step off the shop floor, or try to have someone who could make some ultimate decisions other than me. We had a lot of good people, a lot of people there working, doing things. It's when ideas would compete. You know, if design came up with a fixture design to make these parts and manufacturing didn't like it, well, either no resolution or I'd have to get involved and make a decision. And I wanted someone to start being able to make those decisions for me. I think it was that. Also, I'd been with the company probably 20 years, and I kind of remembered what I was able to do for my dad by taking on more responsibility of doing that. So I was looking for a version of me coming up behind me. And I knew it wouldn't be family member because I have young children, but they're nowhere near ready to be involved. So I knew I had to kind of grow and develop someone. To find what I offered my dad, I'd have to find that person to help me out. And I was looking for that as well.
Right. And I guess based on your situation, you've got a company of 30 or 40 people. It's probably easy, or well, whether it's easy or best or whatever, it's to try and find that person that's actually inside your company rather than looking outside, right?
Yes. I had to learn the hard way. You know, I wish I could. I did probably a year or two, a couple years prior to me, I probably made the decision that I knew I needed to find somebody, but I looked to the outside, and that was, and I mentioned that in the article, and we haven't talked about it yet, but I would hire, you know, I'd put a, you know, somebody, a resume would come across my desk, or someone would make a suggestion for an individual, and they had great success elsewhere. They were plant managers, general managers, all these different things, and so I looked to the outside first, and that was, probably some of them, I was not probably doing it the exact right way. And you'd hire for a resume and you bring this individual in. And I think when you bring someone in with a decent title, a big title, a nice compensation package and give them authority, I think they feel they have to come in with all the answers. And in hindsight or looking back, I wish they would have came in with a few more questions. And I think I gave the interview process and we did a lot of things, but they didn't always understand the culture or the way I would have made decisions or different things. So we didn't have luck. So it took a couple of years of dealing with some, and I don't fault those people. Like I said, it was the whole process or maybe the way I went about trying to bring these people in. Maybe I didn't give it the time I should, but that really didn't work out. So when I was committed then, I didn't want to go to the outside anymore. And I wanted to try to find that person inside that I could mentor or groom from inside. So yeah, I was made the decision to do that.
So how did you select that person, or did you have a couple that you were sort of trying out?
Yeah, I think so. There was probably, that's a great way to put it, trying out. I had probably, you know, four or five individuals who were working here, and in our business in CNC machining manufacturing, you get on my radar by probably having skills and abilities. You know, you have the technical skills. You can machine, you can inspect parts, read blueprints. So you got to be technically sound. But I was looking for more than that. So a lot of times in companies, that's the person that does get promoted, and as they should. But I was really looking for someone though with more soft skills. I had to make sure they had the combination. They had to be strong technical ability, but I also wanted them, you know, to have self-awareness, empathy, be able to communicate, team build, have the ability to lead, and then also want to lead. And so I was looking for those. I was looking for the traits that you don't always, that aren't always the hard skills or that you can't always do, but that you want to be able to notice in people, you know, that maybe they think like an owner without being an owner, all those different things. I was looking for someone who could possess more of the soft side and the people side, emotional, intelligent type side of things. I was searching for that.
And that person or those people, when you started sort of trying them out, they probably had no idea what you were doing.
No, correct. It was almost business as usual. I was just paying maybe a little bit more attention to how they were responding to certain situations or different things that were going. So yeah, no. And I intentionally didn't want to make them aware or make it a competition or do that. I was working with them in certain areas. And then what would happen would be I would just, the person that I see who rose to the top of the forefront, I just started to work a little bit more exclusively with that individual. You know, just started to focus on growing them once I had made that decision. And that probably took, you know, I've been working with these guys for years as it was, but then probably another 6 months to make that decision, 6 or 8 months of working with individuals. And for a variety of reasons, some would fall to the wayside. They still worked for us, or they still, you know, still kept in their original roles, but I knew they would not be the one to grow with me in the role I was developing.
Yeah. And then probably, well, presumably by that approach, they didn't have any idea that, you know, they were being considered for something, so they didn't have to feel slighted or less than when they weren't selected.
Correct. And I think as time went by, it became a little clear, or they knew then, as probably over a couple of year span, mm-hmm. they could start to see, they knew what had happened, and it just we did lose a few that way, or some even questioned or came in my office and talked about it, which I really appreciated. So. But some knew how it worked out, and some may not have, but or they didn't really have that much concern about it, or maybe they knew they weren't the right person. Some voiced different concerns, but at the time, no. And then it became apparent over the years what I had done or what I was doing.
Yeah. So this grooming process, it's an investment in your time, and it's a financial investment as well. So how long did it actually take you to get it all figured out?
We're probably still doing that. No, it was probably the whole deal took probably, you know, we're 10 years into this, you know, the working arrangement that I have with my, I call my right hand man or my, you know, my second in command. But probably the heavy lifting was the first, you know, 1 to 3 years, you know, first couple of years as we started to do things. And I would just, you know, we'd start with projects and have them do certain things. With that, then maybe take over certain, you know, maybe scheduling, and then a different area of the shop, and then whole departments, and then pretty soon the company itself. So I never really told them even what the outcome would be. I would just kind of say, you know, there's more opportunities here for you. There's some room for growth. And he really was dedicated, saw things through. Like I say, he became my go-to guy when things had to get done. So it took years, and I really wanted to give the time. I mean, the investment in the time was really what I didn't do in the past. But when I look back, it's what my grandfather and father did with me. And so I made sure he, you know, when they taught me, it wasn't just what we were doing and how we were doing it. It was why we did it as well. And so he knows how I'd feel about issues, the approach I would take. He probably knows how my dad or father, grandfather thought about things because I explained it in that kind of detail. The approach I took was really, let's say I'll use an example. We were going to visit a customer and we're going to get a work awarded. Well, if we were driving to that customer's plant, I would say, listen, here's this meeting. We've got this meeting scheduled. Here's what they're probably going to go over. They may ask for some, you know, price concessions. They may do this or that. We kind of just talk like a little pre-meeting, what we think would happen, what my responses would be, how I'd deal with it. Then we'd actually have the meeting. You know, we'd be on site at the customer and it'll all play out however it did. And then on the drive back, we kind of debrief or recap what happened and say, what could have been better? Did it really go the way we wanted? Yeah, they added this question. They didn't even ask about that, and kind of talk about it. And we still use that three-pronged approach to a lot of things, whether he's doing employee reviews. We talk about, yeah, they're probably going to ask for this. You might want to talk about that. Here's their concern. Here's what we can do. You know, and so then he'd have the review. We'd have the actual thing would happen. Then we'd talk about it after. And I don't think people reflect enough on past decisions and outcomes. And I think that was important for us to better improve or to continuously improve by kind of, you know, weighing how things, situations worked out on the human side, on the personal side of things. So that was kind of how we dealt with it and over the years. And it took time. So it really took the years just to encounter enough business issues or situations that he would feel comfortable with. And one of the great skills that he had, I think he knew what he knew and then knew what he didn't know. And he would come to me when he didn't feel comfortable making a decision. And then once he became comfortable with making that decision, he could make it on his own. But it was really a great situation, a great way to grow somebody who I didn't want to give up. I wanted the company to grow. I wanted others to make decisions, but I didn't want to change the culture. And I didn't want it to be decisions I wouldn't make or operate in a manner I wouldn't be happy with it. That wasn't our mission, vision, and value. So I created, I don't want to say a mini version of me. It's not, he's different in certain regards, but he would know, he tries to run it the way I would run it. And he tries to make decisions based on what I would do. And that's how we approached it. And it took years to do that. And now pretty much we're working how we would normally do. So there's not really much more I'd add to him. Anything he'd have to learn now would be skills if I wasn't even going to be at the company, if I was going to leave or that. So I'm maximizing his skill set to the most, I think, utilizing him to the fullest at this point for what we're doing.
So what have you and the company actually gained by that second in command?
I got a little, I don't want to call it, you know, brain space or free time to think about some of the things. For a while, I was working on only the urgent things in the company, and I wanted to focus on some of the important things. And so there was, you know, I wanted to develop a strategic plan, which I did. I want to be able to visit customers without having to worry about what's going on back, you know, our decisions not being made. And so we were able to achieve that, implemented some employee of choice programs. So, you know, some things for our employees. So we were able to really grow the business in the way that we wanted. It allowed us to be a little bit more structured, I think. And it created some other opportunities. So as I taught him, well, then he taught below him and created some pathways for advancement as well. So it was really, it worked out for the best, as best it could, having a owner or having a non-owner be involved with decisions. So I'm very pleased with the outcome. And it's evolving daily, you know, or yearly as it goes.
Yeah. So was establishing a second in command part of developing an exit strategy for when you want to retire? I mean, you mentioned that you have young children that are not, you know, anywhere near entering the business, but I mean, is that part of your retirement plan or, you know, I mean, even with children,
now, it is now. Yeah.
Yeah. Even yeah. With kids, you don't know if they want to take over your business. Right. So
no. And I was so happy with how, you know, my father, it's, it's something, if you want to do it, you do it. If they don't, I won't put pressure on them either. And I think that's so important. I think that's a great point. When I started it, probably no. You know, when I developed the second in command, I really, it wasn't with the intent of retire. It was to grow and how do we do more. Now, over the years, yeah, you know, it could become a tool for either retirement or a transition period where, you know, this individual is probably 10, 12 years younger than me. So it allow that time, whether I want family to come in or if they want to come in, and he could provide that kind of transition. Or, yeah, if you want to buy it, or, you know, there's different options with that. So probably didn't start with that intent, you know, that would be an exit strategy. But it, now the more, you know, I've thought about it in the back of my mind, more so as I get older, yeah, that would be a way that we could transition the company to whatever's next. You know,
Next. So, Tom, what do you find challenging in manufacturing right now?
Well, you know, I think it's, you know, how I mentioned earlier that we became, you know, a little more global or national and different things like that. And I think that raises the level of competition. So I just find it so, it's just really competitive. And I'm saying it always was, but I think it's on a certain level. You, if you had a certain advantage or a certain way of doing things, And your customers dealing with you on a local level, they didn't type in that same machine tool into the internet and find other people who could do it. And so I think it's a competitive environment on that. I think margins have been under pressure, and you know we fight to find the talent, you know, the people who are coming up next to want to get involved in the trades and in the skilled trades. And we've had to, I think, deal with them in different ways. And I think we've had to change our approach to finding people. But they don't just come through the shop, like classes in high school and different things. So I think it's really evolved, and where we find our talent pool has changed too. So there's just, I find it's highly competitive, very challenging on that aspect of it. And it's hard to find the people to grow the business.
Yeah. I think I know many years ago I used to host a business show, and we talked a lot about recruitment and how do you find people that want to come into the skilled trades, because these are really interesting, good jobs, but it's still a big challenge.
I agree with that. And I think when you, it used to be, we could wow them right off the bat, I think, with a certain pay structure and a certain benefits, all these different things. And now you can get to that great wage, but you really have to, you start out at a certain level, and it's more of a progression. It's more of a career path versus we're going to give you this huge amount per hour. I think, you know, we've seen some automation. We've seen different things happen that way. So before, if you had a strong back and an alarm clock, you know, you could make a living and a great career and you could do a lot of things. There's a lot more technology, a lot more automation, a lot more some skills that we have to put in people. And I think we struggle to find those pathways. And some of it's business itself. You know, we used to take on more apprentices than we do now, or the training programs, and whether some of that's, you know, based on, you know, profit margins being less and we're not dedicating that money to it, but we really have to, it's really important. So I think it's the schools, it's business, it's the industry as a whole, just working together to try to solve this problem. And locally we are, I mean, I think we're trying to get to those, you know, our high schools have started a careers academy. You know, you did where we you kind of choose a pathway where you're going to go, you know, I'd like nursing or hospitality or manufacturing, and your classes are geared towards that. So I think, you know, the schools and things are listening. I think manufacturing industry is paying closer attention, and we're seeing that there is this shortfall and a skills gap, different things that we're addressing.
Yeah. Well, never a dull moment, eh, Tom? You're not bored.
No. No, what would we do? Yeah, that would be terrible. So time would drag on. So time flies by, is how it goes. So yeah, never a dull moment.
Yeah. I really appreciate you sharing your story with us, because when I read the article, I knew that there were so many things that people could learn from that story. And I'm certain that they will learn from this conversation as well. So thank you very much for your time.
Well, Janet, thank you again for having me on. It was my pleasure. I had a lot of fun.
Great. Thank you. That is our show for today. Tom Marini is the president and CEO of Marini Manufacturing, and you can Let us know if there's a topic that you would like to discuss with us. Just get in touch at makeitrightpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube, and follow us from the various links on the podcast page at lucidi4.com. I'm Janet Eastman. Thanks very much for listening.